were in Canberra, he would stayed here.
And you stayed with that job acquaintance from up until 1972.
Yes.
And then you made another change.
Yes, well, Brenton had been recruited by that time. At the end of that period, he had been recruited to work for the Australian Council for Overseas Aid. And they had been given a grant of money by the government to set up an education unit to do some public education around development issues. And so he asked me to follow him and be his secretary there. So that's how that happened.
So is this the organisation we now know as AUSAID?
No, it's the organisation that's now known as the Australian Council for International Development. It's a non-government peak organisation. Mm. It's a peak for a lot of organisations, including big ones like World Vision, Freedom from Hunger, Community Aid Abroad, that's now Oxfam, I think. Mm. So it's the coordinating group for them.
What was your job?
Again, I was the secretary, but again got dragged into doing a little more than secretarial work. So it was a very exciting time. The unit was new. We basically had green fields. Brendan could set the tone for what was to follow. We had our own education committee, that was a subcommittee of the board of the organisation, and they were mostly the people who were on the more radical side of the organisation. So again, I came into contact with a much broader group of people who were again opening my eyes to some of the bigger issues in the world.
Sounds like the fairly intense work.
Yes, it was. It was stimulating. It was exciting. We were, I guess, pushing the boundaries a lot, actually, in that we were challenging a lot of the notions that some of the more conservative aid agencies had about development. They, in those days, were taking a rather paternalistic approach to aid. And the education unit was challenging that. So it was quite exciting.
Where were you actually based? Where was the
head? We're in Churchill House at that stage, in Northbourne Avenue. Mm. Quite a nice place to work from.
And that you spent 2 years, according to your CV, working in the initial job as secretary. And then
yes.
You switched job.
Yes, my recollection is that the education unit had an increase in its grant. They were taking on more staff, and I was persuaded that I could do the job of one of the education officers. And I think I was a bit surprised about that, but took the opportunity anyway to upgrade my work.
What did your job consist of at this point?
A number of things. Obviously, we were putting out a number of publications at that stage, one of which was a regular monthly magazine called Development News Digest. So I edited that, or co-edited that with one of my other colleagues. And editing consisted of doing a lot of the writing. It consisted of getting other people to write articles. And it also consisted of us actually doing all the layout of the magazine as well. My job was also to prepare articles for other people, to go out and speak to other groups. And one of the things that was happening, of course, in 1975 was that it was the first International Women's Year. And so I had already become part of the feminist movement back in 1972, Brendan's wife Barbara O'Dwyer had introduced me to a new group called WELL, Women's Electoral Lobby, and I had become involved in the activities that took place before the 1972 election, where all politicians were interviewed on a number of feminist issues. So I'd become part of the women's movement, I guess, and in 1975, I and a colleague who worked for Freedom from Hunger, Sue Tuckwell, sat down and scratched our heads and thought about what we could do from where we were in terms of looking at women and development. And at that time, Elizabeth Reid who was Whitlam's women's advisor, had started a program of small grants for people who wanted to do things. And I can remember talking to her about women and aid, and she was very interesting. And eventually Sue and I put in a proposal to do a little piece of research or analysis around what the aid agencies were doing in terms of the gender divide in aid. And we got a grant, and we looked at each of the agencies that were members of ACFAR. I think we interviewed their CEOs, and then we put together a report, which was our assessment of how the agencies dealt with the gender issues, and it wasn't very favourable to a number of them, and our report was greeted with howls of rage when we released it at the AGM.
Had you done any research of this kind before?
No. No. I mean, women were very new to this stuff and we were very experimental. But looking back on it, I can see that the questions we were asking were the right ones. We were asking, are we transferring our stereotypes of women and men to other countries? And if so, what does that look like, and what might the impact be? So we were looking at who's getting the training. Things like who in that society is looking after the animals and who's getting the training. And often it would be that it's the women who are looking after the animals, but it's the men who are getting the training in animal husbandry. So we were questioning that. And I think that I still look back on that and think, yes, it was the right sort of questions we were asking.
A challenging outcome too, from what you were saying. There were howls.
There were howls of protest from some of the more conservative agencies who wanted to burn the report, and were even more outraged when I pointed out that it wasn't their report, that it had been funded by the government and therefore belonged to the government. But at the same time, some of the agencies were very welcoming and some of the key people were very welcoming and very praising of the report. So it remained alive. It didn't get burnt, and we didn't get burnt at the stake either.
This report you did as part of that, as the education secretary of the Council for Overseas Aid. Going back just a little bit, you mentioned you had joined Women's Lib in the early 70s.
Well, not Women's Lib. I joined the Women's Electoral Lobby. So Women's Lib was a little more radical. And I was a little intimidated by the thought of joining that because they seemed to me to be mostly very well-educated women, and I was very conscious that I'd left school at 16 and I was generally considered not to be very bright when I failed my 11 plus, etc., etc. So I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself. And while I was interested in what people like Germaine Greer were saying, I was quite intimidated by those women.
Mm. So why did you join the WEL then?
I think because I was encouraged to by somebody I knew, somebody I trusted, and because there was clearly a job I could do there, and I got involved in interviewing politicians or prospective politicians, and it would always be with another person, but because I had stenographic skills, I could see that my note-taking skills were very, very useful. And so... for example, Gail Walensky and I interviewed a local aspiring politician, a doctor, who was running for the federal seat of Canberra, and he had said something that I recorded, which was basically opposing abortion. And when we released our report, he challenged what we had written about him. And, of course, I was able to produce my shorthand notes and say, no, this is what you said. This is the record of the interview. So it was quite... That was very good for me to be able to actually put my skills to use in a very wide sense.
And this was... When did you start work for WEL?
That would have been late 72, just before the federal election. It was probably about August or September.
So the issues that led you to join, were they equality? status, or was it, were there specific?
I think I'd probably been a I'd had feminist tendencies from a fairly young age. I remember when I was about 14 or 15, I had a fairly conflicting relationship with my father at that stage, and I was challenging him a lot. My mother at that stage had returned to work full time. He was working full time. But he would come home from work, have his dinner cooked and served up to him, and then sit down, whereas my mother was doing all the housework, and she would rope the girls in, us girls in, of course, to help her. And I couldn't understand why everybody else who was either doing full-time education or full-time work was having to take their share of the load, and he would not. So I can remember challenging him quite strongly about and rudely about this, and that being the source of some conflict in our household. So I think at that stage there were cracks showing in my marriage too, as I struggled with working and looking after the children, and my husband perhaps having a more traditional view of the world and of my role. And him not probably adjusting very well to my return to the workforce. So there were a whole lot of feminist stirrings going on, and I really could understand what the women's movement was about and relate to it.
Had you taken an active role in politics before then?
No, but I was interested. I was very pleased when the Whitlam government was elected in 1972. I could see that it was time for a change. My husband too was pleased. I mean, I think just generally the view around the country was that it was time for a change. But as I became involved in issues around international social justice, issues around feminism, of course I became interested in the politics. And living in Canberra, of course, politics is very much the lifeblood of the town. So yes, I absorbed it, I think, and took it on in a big way.
And this, you did this work with the Women's Electoral Lobby and all the other activities while you were still working for the Council for Overseas.
Yes. The well was obviously entirely voluntary.
And was this hard to combine? I mean, it sounds like a very intense work at both levels.
It was hard to combine it, yes. I mean, the children were my responsibility. My husband wasn't very supportive of me getting involved in this sort of activity. He was very uncomfortable about me getting involved and interested in politics generally. So it was very, very hard, yes. And in fact, the marriage fell apart in 1974, I think it was. So after that, I was on my own, and I did then have the freedom to do what I could do within the physical limitations, of course, and the financial limitations, because money was very tough by then.
Shall we take a short break here?
Let's take a short break.